Mr. Rosenblum?
May it please the court. My name is Scott Rosenblum and I represent the appellant, Mr. Elijah Van Zandt, in this matter. This issue before us is an issue that this court has addressed on a number of occasions, and in fact it presents a similar circumstance as troubled this court in cases.
Isn't this one of those cases where an appeal is dangerous? Because if he won, wouldn't he sacrifice his acceptance of responsibility discount?
There is some risk, but I think when you review the totality of this case, and in my view, something that will be addressed in a 2255 petition, that this young man, when you look at his background, when you look at some of his mental infirmities, I think that in this case, that a competent counsel would have examined many other issues that could have resulted in other departures for this young man, in addition to defending relevant conduct issues, such as a 5H4 departure for medical conditions, such as a 5K213 condition for mental disease or defect. Certainly, if I had been representing this young man, I would have had him examined by a psychiatrist based on this record. So, yes,
it was a close case on acceptance of responsibility, but he got 3 points, right?
Based on what the
court said. Yeah,
the court said it was a
close
case.
Yeah.
Based on the objections that were filed and the objections that appeared to be attacking some of the factual matters in this case.
But, you know, as we sit here today, he withdrew his objection to the relevant conduct determination. So, really, on what basis can we reach that issue?
Your Honor, this is a case where I don't think waiver is an issue, because in this particular matter it's before this court because Judge Murphy determined in essence that this young man was represented by ineffective counsel, and because of that he did not abandon his notice of appeal. In fact, counsel was ineffective for not filing the notice of appeal. I don't think it's a leap to extrapolate that further and say that during the course of this sentencing that this particular counsel was still under the same serious ethical violations and operating with the same serious ethical violations that he was when he failed to listen to his client and failed to perfect his client's appeal. Those ethical violations consisted of apparently use of marijuana, a conviction for marijuana, representing individuals that were subjected to conflicting positions. All these issues, in my view, would render this young man, who was uneducated, almost functionally illiterate, suffering from extreme auditory problems, suffering from medical problems, suffering from mental problems, with essentially having to paddle through this morass of the sentencing guidelines without counsel at all.
Well, of course, see, we're looking at the record as we have it. I guess you're alluding to the fact that he's going to file an habeas challenge on ineffective assistance, right?
I would say that's certainly in the future.
Yeah, well, it's not present, though, so I don't think you want to keep arguing ineffective assistance of counsel.
No, I understand, but the ineffective assistance of counsel issue, I think, in this matter is just based on what the footnote in Judge Murphy's order in determining that, in fact, the counsel was ineffective for not perfecting the appeal, which I think goes to whether or not this young man's waiver of his appeal and waiver of that issue was knowingly, voluntarily, and willingly done at the time of sentencing to address the other issue that was suggested to me. So, in my view, then, he can raise these issues on appeal, and because he can raise these issues on appeal, I think the court can look at the issue of relevant conduct in this circumstance and determine whether or not, since the court, in this case, did not make a specific finding, whether or not the pre-sentence investigation report and the probation officer put enough factual matters and suggested there was enough indicia of reliability to support what she was saying so that the court can rely on it. and in our view, there was not enough information, enough sufficient indicia of reliability to rely on the pre-sentence report to essentially increase the punishment range that this young man, who pled guilty to a four-count indictment, 1.1 grams of cocaine base. I'm sure at some point his counsel sat down and suggested that he was in a range of 37 to 45 months, only to come time for the pre-sentence report to continually increase, and essentially increasing his punishment time, his relevant conduct, fivefold based on the marijuana computation, and increase his punishment threefold, or more than threefold. I think that this puts us in a situation that this court was concerned about in the Bocale case, in the Robinson case, in the Morrison case, where we have the prosecution obtaining a conviction for a relatively small amount of narcotics, and then with the aggregate rule, obviously, piling on and obtaining a substantial increase in sentence based upon witnesses that were not presented at the sentencing hearing. It's our position that the record is devoid of a basis with which to support the relevant conduct that the court relied upon by not in the pre-sentence report by not making specific findings on its own.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Rosenblum. Ms. Robertson?
Thank you. May it please the court. It's the government's position, Your Honor, that there could be no clear instance of waiver. What the defendant is attempting to do in this case is bootstrap in an objection that he withdrew by saying, well, you shouldn't find waiver because of ineffective assistance of counsel. Well, we're not here today on ineffective assistance of counsel. There's been no finding of ineffective regarding the objections or the sentencing. What we have is a finding by the district court that defense counsel did not file a notice of appeal, even though his client instructed him to. There's no evidence that the defense counsel was ineffective in his advice to the defendant. There's nothing in this record, as opposing counsel argues, about what trial counsel sat down and advised his client he would be looking at sentencing. None of that is here. None of that's in the record before this court. It's a means of the defense attempting to bootstrap in issues which are clearly waived. There can be no clearer instance of waiver than filing objections to relevant conduct. Some of those objections were specifically course of conduct objections. Going into the district court and prior to any evidence or any statements, the defendant withdrew those objections. Why did the defendant withdraw those objections? Well, the government believes it's in large part due to the response that the government filed, which is attached to the United States brief, indicating that the defendant was falsely denying and frivolously contesting relevant conduct, which was true, and that the defendant should not be entitled to acceptance of responsibility. Seeing that, the defendant wisely withdrew his objections, which were frivolous, proceeded to sentencing, told the court that all the information contained in the pre-sentence report was accurate. That's what the defendant told the court. The defendant reiterated to the district court, I want to withdraw my objection. We believe that that relevant conduct issue is waived. That being said, even if it wasn't waived, it was not plainly erroneous, the relevant conduct determination. All of the relevant conduct was drugs the defendant sold in the Carbondale, Southern Illinois resident area within a one-year time period, and we believe that all that relevant conduct properly came in as supported by the pre-sentence investigation. For those reasons, we'd ask that you affirm the district court.
Thank you, Ms. Robertson. Mr. Rosenblum, how much time does he have? 4 minutes.
I would just point out that with respect to what the defendant said at the time of sentencing under 3E1.11, it is not incumbent upon a defendant for acceptance of responsibility to admit and accept responsibility for relevant conduct that is not part of the offense conduct at issue. Additionally, I would also again point out that in a case such as this, waiver is generally construed liberally on behalf of the defendant.
But if he reinstates his objections, surely the judge is going to yank the acceptance of responsibility.
That is a risk. That's certainly a risk, and he would have to calculate that risk against whether or not
Also, I don't understand your reference to Apprendi. How can Apprendi have any application in a guilty plea case? Apprendi is about having a right to have the jury determine the quantity in certain cases. Well, there's obviously no jury if you plead guilty.
Your Honor, the Apprendi issue was raised as in reference to some other jurisdictions that are determining it may have some applicability in circumstances that we don't believe are at issue at this case, but it was just raised to preserve that in the future.
Okay, well, thank you very much to both counsel. Our last case for our